Oh, hi there, everyone. You're listening to the ITV/STV Rugby World Cup podcast with me, and my name is Di Flats, and him.
My name is Tom Shanklin.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Dave.
First week in Tokyo, fella.
Yes. Yes.
How you been getting on?
Very good, mate. What a difference it's made. Got my own little self-contained apartment, as you know. Sorry for a little bit of noise. It's going on in the background. Just putting a wash on.
What? Wow, that's a bit self-sufficient.
Washer dryer in the bathroom. I don't know how to work it. I just press one button, it goes around.
Mate, we got like, because we're in a hotel, you got ITV have given us one, they pay for one laundry load a week. So you get these bags and you fill them up and you just ring housekeeping. They come and get them, but they come back immaculately folded in a vacuum packed bag, which is a quarter of the size of the bag you sent.
You've done me there. I've got to either tumble dry my kit or hang it up.
On the subject of laundry and self-sufficiency and all that kind of stuff and personal admin, every day I've been making sure I've got like a clean iron shirt. I've got loads of shirts. I've got my iron out in my room. In Eater, they didn't have a proper iron. They had like this weird gadget, and I might have said on the pod before, but it was like a big paperweight that you plug in, and I had to use the bed, like the mattress with a sheet on it, as my ironing board. It was just like absolutely terror. But I've made sure my admin's up to speed, or I did for the first 4 weeks or so. Now I'm going to all these press conferences and doing all these interviews every day, and I'm not on camera. So I'm like, do you know what? No. I said to the producer, do I need to be wearing trousers and a smart shirt every day? And he said, no, you don't. The one person who's noticed, Eddie Jones, Esquire.
What's he said?
Every day. He's like, you look smart, mate. In every game, God, I like the jacket. This is nice. Where'd you get this? And he's always complimenting. You know, goes, oh, hang on, mate. You're on holiday. You've given up? I said, I've given up, mate. You've given up? I said, but I've lost hope. I've given up. I don't need to impress you anymore. Very casual, mate. Very casual. I mean, like, I was in chinos and a t-shirt. It wasn't that bad.
You quite possibly could be his favourite person in England.
No, I think he's like that with everyone.
He's not. He's definitely not.
But I'm not actually here to be everyone's best friend, but I haven't had any awkward interviews to do yet because Checker didn't come through.
Anyway, what I've been up to, went to a table tennis bar.
Was that where you went with Cotter?
Yeah, Cotter. And he was texting me, telling me what he's like at table tennis, his strengths, his weaknesses, making sure I knew that he was a decent player. Like, he was just feeling me out, see what I was like. And I was like, oh, I'm not, you know, I've played a little bit, but I'm not that good. And I destroyed him.
You beat him 11-3, 11-2.
Around that score, yeah.
Do you know how I know? He texted me straight afterwards.
Did he?
Yeah. He's got it. Didn't you kick him out of that apartment as well? Wasn't he where you are now? And you kicked him out?
Yeah, and I'm taking photos and videos in wherever I see him around town. He's just walking around with his suitcase. I got a good video of him yesterday barging into a Japanese man when he's trying to cross the road, and he's on a power walk. You know, like when someone's walking with intent.
Yeah.
He went swimming yesterday, I think.
Did he?
Yeah.
He's not in a hotel, so he must have found a public swimming bath and gone there.
Yeah, they did.
He's so weird. That's so weird, mate. When you go to Tokyo, you don't find a leisure centre and go swimming, do you, if you haven't got kids with you?
You know when someone's up for table tennis, when they turn up at the bar and they've got a pair of jeans on, but he had an Asics t-shirt and a pair of running shoes on. So he was agile. He was there to play table tennis, to sweat, and he also had the purchase on the shoes, on the soles, to get around the table. But when you're up against quality, what can you do?
Have you had a night out yet?
No, not yet.
It'll come.
As I said on the last pod, I went to Whoopi Goldberg's, went to another burger joint last night, Blah Cows.
Why are you not eating Japanese food?
Yesterday, I went for a little walk around Shibuya, and I went to the Zebra Cross, and it wasn't that busy, so...
It's just not that amazing, is it?
I couldn't take a 360-degree photo. And I thought, right, come on now, you're in Japan, have some local cuisine. So I went into a stand-up sushi bar, and I managed to order salmon nigiri, and I wanted some prawn. The prawn one as well. Anyway, it was raw prawn on rice, and the chef just got blowtorch out and just charred a little bit of the top of the prawn, so it was a little bit crispy, and the rest was just like goo. I ordered four of them, and he put four in front of me, and he was like egging me on to eat them. He's going, eat. And I didn't want to eat them because they're raw, but I had to. I felt like I was in a Bush Tucker trial. Yeah, so that's what put me off. That's what put me off. But I found a good burrito place. So I go in there for a large burrito. Have a meat one.
More traditional Japanese cuisine. See if you can find a fish and chip shop at an Irish pub, mate.
And I have a chicken teriyaki salad. Yeah, so that's what I've been up to. What have you been up to?
Well, Tommy, there's a rule here, basically, that because we're on our reporting crew, there are four of us. We have to have like a team dinner a big team dinner this week. So we went out for that last night, and Benny Kay gave me a recommendation for a restaurant in Shinjuku called Meat and Wine. And he said, it's the best steak I've ever had. I'm thinking, sure, it was good, mate, but I'll decide on the quality of the meat because I'm the guy, the meat guy. And holy moly, it was properly sensational food.
Really?
Nondescript little joint. Absolutely sensational. We had two big boards of beef, a board of pork, a board of chicken, and it was so good. We ordered it all again.
Really?
Mate, it was honestly, it's the best meal I've had. I've had some great food out here, but it's the best meal I've had. It was just, ugh.
Just pork, chicken, and beef?
Yeah. We had some chips. We're not animals.
That's really Japanese. Well done.
We had a break from tradition because we are traditional eaters.
Oh, okay, yeah. Knew it would. Always got an answer for everything, haven't you, flatman? That's what your teacher used to say.
Andy Robinson said that to me once. I think he said to me, it was Robbo, he said to me, you're such a smart ass. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, everyone throws at you, answer it. And I said, well, if I've got an answer, I'm going to say it.
Even if it's right or wrong.
Well, no, it's like, if you're saying something's wrong and I think it's right, I will say so. And I think his answer was, well, you're a beep then. But, you know, mate, we're doing our bit and we were doing a bit. Mm. This weekend's going to be busy, mind. Hoocha.
I know. Coming up, we have our thoughts on the two big ones, plus contributions from Mara Toji, Eddie Jones, Steve Hansen, and some of your film quotes from iTunes. So, Lord help us.
God. Before we preview the semi-finals, Tommy, we've got some unfinished business from the previous episode regarding our selections for Team of the Quarters. It won't come as much of a surprise to learn that it provoked a little bit of criticism on Twitter. We did ask people to criticise us.
Not as much as I thought.
No, because we're basically right. We thought we should address it. Tell us about your backs then, boy, quickly, and then I'll do my pack.
Okay, I had Smith, Moanga, Delande, Vakatawa, May, Korobetti, and Barrett.
Yeah, and I had Mako, Bess, Sinclair, Ritalik Itoje, Underhill, Wainwright, Reed.
Derek, who sounds quite annoyed, says, England's 10 gets 20 points, sets up tries in a quarterfinal of the Rugby World Cup, but not even mention from you. If it was another 10 doing that, you'd be writing a column, standard. That's an angry tweet.
Derek, are you short of sleep, mate? Are you short of sleep?
Derek.
Derek, are you serious, Derek?
Derek. I'd want a friend called Derek.
Derek is one of your dad's mates, not one of your mates. My dad's got a mate called Derek. He's actually a really good bloke.
Farrell was good. Farrell, very good. I just thought Moanga was potentially a little bit better. That was all. Derek.
The worst thing is, I think Derek's right and that your selection was disgraceful, but it's your selection, fella.
Hold on. You get a bit of stick as well. Abigail Belletta. Curry has been standout at six. Sorry.
What are you apologising for, Abigail?
He won man of the match, mate.
I don't care.
He won man of the match in a quarter final, and he just ignored him.
If that was someone else playing six, you'd have done a column about it. Standard. I'm always doing columns about people playing well in those match reviews that I never, ever write. I literally never write them. Haven't written one for 2 years.
Benedict Barnes says, no Curry. Wainwright got an intercept and an elbow in the face. Big deal. Mate, you should have put Curry in. I'm sorry.
You should have put Farrell in. You're a disgrace. You're out of touch. But someone, Alistair Henderson, says, geez, Donkey D'Alande in the centres. What I will say to Alistair is, we want to be respectful of the people that criticise us, or disagree with us, rather. Alistair, are you kidding me? He was absolutely taking names in that quarterfinal. He was a monster in that second half. He's so strong. He might not be the most subtle, nuanced, skillful player, but he is an absolute force of nature. And without him, the Springboks stand a significantly slimmer chance of winning the World Cup. He is mega.
He's more of a mule than a donkey anyway. Peter Haig, must have been tough to drop Curry. Joseph Martin, strong side. Curry unlucky.
It was like, you must have been tough to drop Curry. No, Eddie Jones didn't drop me from the World Cup squad. I was never in it. He hasn't been dropped. But then, Curry's been standout at six. Sorry. Can't believe you left Curry out, whatever it is. Then it's like, Hamish McPhee, how could you leave out Ardie Surveyor? Or not sure how you could leave. He's been phenomenal in my view. We're definitely wrong for not putting Curry in. Definitely wrong for not putting Surveyor in. I'll stick with Wainwright. I thought he was great.
Can I just say, for those that have given Flats a bit of stick, and me, on the team selection.
Mainly Shanks, yeah.
We're just asking different roles from people. Get with the times. We asked for a different role from Curry, and he provided that. It's modern day rugby.
Like Eddie said, welcome. Well, join us. We're taking it forward. It's a new age. Join us. Also, Hamish, you know, I'd have Dane Coles and Cody Taylor ahead for Hooker. Well, yeah, the point is we picked, as Julian Parmenter noticed, we picked Rory Best because we're old softies and it was his last game and he's a legend. I said that at the start. I'm not actually thinking he was the best hooker in the quarterfinals. I don't think that. But I put him in for blimmin' old time's sake. What we're doing is, Shanks, what we're doing here is we're those MCs at a dinner who say, right, any questions from the floor for Jono and Brian and everyone? And when someone asks a question, we mock them and then say, any more questions? And no one else puts their hand up. We wonder why.
Yeah.
We're doing that. We actually don't mind you criticising us. But what I would say is that, Derek, you actually sounded a bit angry about it. And I want to remain respectful here. But if you weren't angry and I've misread the tweets, then I apologise and I'll eat humble pie. What I would say is if you are angry about that, then Google best things to do in your area and get out more.
I'd love to find out Derek's surname as well, just to give him a proper name check.
His nickname at his rugby club will be Gripper. He's Gripper, and he's got Gripper embroidered on his, whatever it is, Basingstoke, whatever it is, RFC, waterproof top. He's got Gripper.
The back of his T-shirt.
I remember once doing this coaching day, right? It's me and Danny Grucock and me in about late 90s when we were at Saracens doing we're old Mill Hillians. And this one bloke, he was called Gripper. That's where I got it from. And this bloke, Gripper, took over. He's like head of the youth section. And he was so alpha with these kids. He was so overbearing. Like Danny was like playing for England and stuff. And he wouldn't let Danny speak. And then he started talking about playing prop. And it was like, it was a Sunday. And the Saturday I'd played for like Saracens first team. Like, not like we were mugs. And he was telling everyone, he wouldn't let me speak about propping. And I was like, okay. So in the end, we just started calling him Flipper. And he corrected us a couple of times and said it's Gripper. But we just kept calling him Flipper for the whole day. It was one of the funniest days of my life. All right, Grip. All right, Flip. Cheers, Flip. Flipper. Now, as Flipper said to all the kids, all the parents, as Flipper said, and everyone's looking around, and we just straight-faced it. Oh, it was great. It was so great. Anyway, one of the selections that wasn't questioned by anyone was that of Maro Itoje, who had another hugely influential game against the Wallabies in the quarterfinal. He was so good. And it was a pleasure to catch up with the man himself the other day and to find out how he's developed into such a worldie with a little bit of help from Eddie Jones, Billy Vunipola, and of course, Stevie Borths.
Had to bring the energy of the team. I like to set the tone, set the mentality. My game is all about the amount of times I'm involved in the game and the effectiveness of my involvement.
He's a massively tough player, great competitive desire, competes.
You look back at the archetypal mould of a lock forward, can you see that you don't quite fit it?
Each generation, there's going to be steps forwards, there's going to be things done a little bit different. I'm probably a lock forward of this generation. The expectation is for you to do more. I think you have to do more in terms of your contact work. The lineouts changed dramatically, even from when I started to where we are now. This game is definitely changing.
As a player, you have to look at what needs to be done, how do you need to adapt. And Maro's a guy with the diligence he has in terms of his attitude, the competitiveness he brings. I think he's a player who will continue to look to ways to improve his game.
He gives us that calming influence. There's been times where we've been on the back foot, but most of the time Maro's doing his thing, disrupting lineouts, turning balls over, running over people. Obviously inspires us that play with him to try and do the same thing.
Joe Marler, in a complimentary sense, referred to you this week as a nose on the rugby field. He definitely meant it as a compliment, but what do you take that to mean?
I think he'll say, tries hard and is annoying, even when there's no need to try hard or be annoying. Yeah. I've calmed down a little bit from my youth. When you're young, you just try hard at everything, and when you get a little bit older, you learn how to use your energy a little bit more wisely and a little bit more smart.
You're a thinker, you're a rounded gentleman, an individual, you're educated, so you could have done a lot of different things with your life. Why did you choose rugby? Because it's a hard living, isn't it?
It's a hard life, you know. It's a hard life, rugby. But it's a good life. It's a good life. Where would you rather be? I'm here in Japan, Oita, and this beautiful sunset, beautiful weather.
Great company.
Where would you rather be in life?
We're going to talk about the game in more detail shortly. But Flats, you mentioned Marla calling Maro a massive nose. What is a nose?
Norse is the guy who is whacking into every breakdown, even when the ball's won. He doesn't stop screaming people's names. He's trying to charge down every kick, even though he's nowhere near it. He's also trying to charge down conversions. He's constantly screaming at line-out time, hurry up, get it in, hurry up, get it in, get it in.
And this is just training, by the way. This is just in practice. He's at the airport with a ball, spinning it in the air.
So true. He's that guy.
Wears rugby kit everywhere.
Only wears free clothes. Only wears sponsored kit, like sponsored training kit. Has a protein shake on the go at all times.
Always watching old games.
This is bad, actually. And he's not a Norse, actually. He's a lovely bloke. Norse is not actually an insult. Norse is actually can be a compliment. So Steve Borthwick's a Norse in training because he doesn't let anything go. But that's the compliment because that's why he was got 57 caps for England. So just a perfectionist. But Andy Williams, the Welsh scrum half, you remember him?
Yeah, milkshake.
Milkshake. Yeah, always had a protein shaker. Always had a protein shaker. We used to have, in pre-season, you just get beasted. As everyone knows, you just get absolutely beasted. So like on a Wednesday afternoon, it was like, right, boys, it's before we do train, before we go and train again, we got stretching sessions, 30 minutes, front five, middle five, back five. Okay. So the front five, we did it backwards. The middle five go in, do theirs, they finish and come out. The front five go in after lunch and do our 30 minutes of stretching. But in the bar, you know what it's like. You're actually in the bar, the club bar where everyone drinks at weekends, but you're stretching on the floor. And Andy Williams came back in and we're like, what are you doing, mate? He's like, I thought I might do an extra 30 minutes stretching. And he got so much abuse for doing extra stretching that he left. It's like, if you think about it, we bullied him in a friendly. We bullied him out of doing extra stretching. That was a low moment. I think we didn't apologise for that. It's because we'd go on a night out and he'd have a protein shake with him. I just couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
He didn't really, but that's what we like to say.
Alwyn Jones is a massive Norse.
Everyone says that, yeah.
Just in training. You know, just someone who wants to go flat out no matter what you're doing. It could be just tackled practice, not even full on, but like technique. You know, he just nail you when you're on your knees doing tackle technique. Every shot is like 100%. You know, even when you've got a tackle shield, you know, or you're playing against opposed opposition, but they're not actually allowed to tackle you. They're just sort of in the way. He'll get his chest in the way, his shoulders in the way, and he'll like properly stop you, even though it's touch. Aggressive touch. That's what he likes. Yes, Alan Wynn. Probably the worst. There's a few like that, mind.
He's one of the ones that, like, he's made it. That's how he's got where he is.
Yeah,
like,
so it's not always the ones on the outside that can be Norses. You know, you've got the best player in Wales that we've seen for a long time is the biggest Norse of all.
He's got where he is through
Norsing.
Dedication, work ethic. Like, he's obviously a talented man and he's got good genetics, but he's not beautifully talented. Like, you know, there are second rows. Like, Brody Retallick is just obviously a hard-working geezer, but just mega talent. Alan Wynn is just a force of nature, isn't he? So he's probably got to be like that.
On another note, Flats, on your selection, team of the quarters, Carl Sinclair kept his cool, didn't he, when he had a little pat on the head? Should that be a penalty, do you reckon?
Yep, 100%.
I mean, where's your cut-off point, though? You get up off the ground, you tap someone on the head. That's a little bit different to actually making a beeline for someone and walking 3 or 4 metres just to tap them on the head. So I'm not sure it should be a penalty, but I think they should be warned straight away that that cannot be done.
It's a penalty offence, mate. They changed the laws a while ago. I'm confident of this. If I'm wrong, come at me, tweet me and tell me I'm wrong. I'm happy to be wrong.
Not seen any penalties given for that at this World Cup, though.
No, I haven't seen it for a couple of seasons, but a couple of seasons or so ago, there was a ruling made that you can't do that because it's ungentlemanly and it's bad conduct, or unsporting. Well, not ungentlemanly, unsporting. I hate it.
What's the difference between that? So you see it a lot in scrums, okay, because it's confrontational. You know, you're up against your opposition. You want to get the one over them. What's the difference between that and a centre tackling another centre? They both go down to the floor and you just tap him on the head when you're getting back up. That's never, ever going to be a penalty. Yeah, it's the same thing, really.
Give someone a little tap, like when Callum Mahoney hit Ant Watson. Like, he smashed him in that England-Tonga game and he got up and tapped him on the head. When I interviewed Ant Watson after that, I said, was that like, have some of that, son? Or was that, you know, still love your baby kind of thing? And he was like, I think it was have some of that. I'm not sure. So it's like, that's different.
No, you're just choosing that because you don't know. That's not the same.
No.
Yeah, well, you're thinking that he tapped him on the head because...
You haven't let me finish, you weirdo.
No. Oh, passive-aggressive, go.
So it's not weirdo, it's just not passive, it's just aggressive. But like, if someone gives you a tap, like I've been in scrums where I've been dominated by someone and had a bad scrum and they give you a tap on the head, like Carl Heyman tapped me on the head once and it wasn't arrogance. It was, we've all been there, pal. and like the next scrum, I had a really good scrum the next scrum, and he's like, nice scrum, pal. But there would have been a couple of head taps in there, but they weren't arrogant. When you're ruffling someone and jeering at them, like I remember playing against Leicester Tigers, and it was like a semi-final or something, and I was against Castro Giovanni, and he was obviously a top prop, but we had a really good day against him, and like he had one good scrum, and he starts shouting, Vamos, Vamos, and like smacking me on the head. I was like, you've got to be kidding me, mate. Where have you been for the last 50 minutes? Like the next scrum after that, we just went absolutely turbo. It's just bad practice. And you've also got to be careful because it looks rubbish and it's just not good, nice piece of behaviour. But also, you're only ever one scrum away from being reintroduced to your own colon. So it's like, well, I don't know why you would necessarily do that.
My point was there's not much difference between us, you know, if a massive hit happens in the midfield and you get up and you tap someone's head, rough or whatever you want to call it, there's not much difference between that and a scrum. That was all my point.
I think if you give someone a tap and a little dig, I think that's one thing. But if you're openly like patting them on top of the head, rubbing the top of their head as they walk away, that doesn't happen very often in the midfield. I don't think I've seen it happen. For me, that should be a penalty. And Carl Sinclair did very well. You are right. The lad should have been penalised. Shouldn't do that. Mm. It's rubbish, isn't it?
What do you reckon Mauro brings to the England game, other than just being massively aggressive, low error count, great in the line out, massive engine in the scrum?
Yeah, exactly. Almost like, what doesn't he bring? Like, what would you want from him? I suppose you could say, like, Brody Retallick has got a better passing game than Mauro Itoje.
Great skill set.
Mauro's skills are really good, but I think Brody Retallick's are a level above. Otherwise, I don't see much difference from them. I think Brody Retallick is probably, yeah, his passing game's so good. His link game's so good. He's sometimes he goes further than being a link player. Sometimes he becomes a distributor. He's that good.
Yeah.
Like Mako sometimes when he's really on it. And there's not a lot between them, but I think Retallick's probably got a better passing game. But Mauro is just, he does everything. He does absolutely everything and even calls the lineouts.
I think we see Retallick probably in those wider channels a little bit more than we see Itoje.
So thanks to Mauro and his chums for that. I expect he'll need to be at top of his game this weekend, along with everyone else, if England are going to have a chance against New Zealand. The match is, of course, live and exclusive on ITV with kickoff at 9 a.m. Saturday. I'm not going to say 9 a.m. Saturday morning because a.m. means morning. So it's either 9 a.m. Saturday or it's 9 o'clock Saturday morning, whichever way you want to look at it. Coverage from Yokohama with Mark Pugac and the crew commences at 7:30 a.m. in the morning.
We like to know what's what in the world, don't we, Tommy?
Yeah, we do. The Economist is far more than just economics and finance, David. It covers a range of subjects from world politics and business to science, technology, arts, the environment, and of course, sport.
Yeah, and I was on the internet recently. There was an article about how little's being done to protect sports men and women from brain injuries, which is pretty topical at this stage. Some of the hits we've seen in this World Cup, holy majoli. And there was another one on how Japan's learned to love rugby, and they really, really have. From what we've witnessed, they really, really adopted it. They love it.
And what's great about The Economist, it sifts through all the noise. It focuses on the essential information. It tells the real story.
Yeah, and it's been going for over 170 years. Did you know that?
No.
Now you know.
It's for the kind of person who never stops asking questions, Dave, and wants to know why the world is that way. Why?
Yeah, and The Economist is the smart guide to the forces changing your world. So if you've never stopped asking questions, you can get a free copy now. For your free print copy of The Economist, just text ITV to 78070.
That is ITV to 78070.
I'm Sam Warburton, and you're listening to the ITV Rugby World Cup podcast.
Enough dilly-dallying. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. But before we pick the brains of a tactical mastermind, which is you, Dave, the flat man, with a plan about how England beat New Zealand, let's hear from two coaches, starting with the mischievous Eddie Jones.
Well, we don't have any pressure, mate. Put up your hand if you think we can win. There you go. So no one thinks we can win. No one thinks we can win. There's 120 million Japanese people out there whose second team are all the All Blacks. So there's no pressure on us. We've just got to have a great week, enjoy it, relax, train hard, enjoy this great opportunity we've got. Whereas they've got to be thinking about, well, they're looking for their third World Cup, so that does bring some pressure. And that's the great thing about the World Cup. You know, you've got the top four teams in the world now. On one Saturday, you've got to be the best team for 80 minutes. And we've prepared for this game for 2.5 years. You know, I can remember being in Kyoto 2.5 years ago. and quickly you could do the mathematics. Even the Australian could do the mathematics that we were going to play New Zealand in the semi-final. So, yeah, progressively we've built a game that we think we can take New Zealand with, and we've done that over the last 2.5 years. So, you know, we're just excited about the possibility. The New Zealand talk about them walking towards the pressure. Well, this week the pressure's going to be chasing them down the street. You know, that's the reality of it. That's how we're approaching the game. Yeah, we've got nothing to lose. That's the exciting thing for us. We can just go out there and play our game, and play it as well as we can. If we're good enough, we'll win. If we're not good enough, we've done our best. I don't think they're vulnerable. I think but the pressure's a real thing. You know, I think the busiest bloke in Tokyo this week's going to be Gilbert Onoka, the mental skills coach. Because they've got to deal with all this pressure about winning the World Cup 3 times, you know. It's potentially the last game for their greatest coach. It's potentially the last game for their greatest captain. And they're going to be thinking about those things. Those thoughts go through your heads. You know, it's always much harder to defend the World Cup. And they'll be thinking about that. And therefore, there is pressure for them.
Like he's doing what he should do, and that's try and take the pressure off his own team by saying they don't have any and that it's chasing us down the street. And it's getting people excited. All the All Blacks are under pressure. And, yeah, look, we are. But no more than we normally are. And we've got a pretty good track record of dealing with it. So we've got to continue to do that. But just as importantly, that pressure that's on us is also on them, and how they deal with it will be interesting to watch.
So let's hear it. How are England going to take apart the mighty All Blacks? Does it start with what they do to face the Haka?
Yeah, they've got to wear tracksuit tops and they've got to face away.
Yep.
You know that?
Yep. Yeah, link arms.
Did you ever do anything to like combat the Haka?
Yeah, we did everything, mate. We did everything. I've probably spoken about it before. Wore tracksuit tops. That's the key, isn't it? Wear your tracksuit top and then walk really slowly to the side of the field and take off your tracksuit top just to cool them down.
Takes a sting out of them, doesn't it?
Yeah, we tried that and narrowly lost that one, didn't we? 47-10. Half time, but yeah, no. You can try everything, can't you? But it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. That's why you ask, how do you beat them? You can't. You can't beat them. They're unbeatable. No, of course they're not. I think the main thing is that everyone talks about, right, we've got to play our game. It's not about them. We'll concentrate on us. And to a point, I get that. But also, one thing you know that New Zealand need, like Japan in a sense, is fast ball. They need tempo. They've got some great ball carriers. They're very good off slow ball, but no one's as good from slow ball as they are from fast ball. So
yeah.
England monstered Australia, but I think England have got to do a significantly better job at slowing ball down than they did against Australia, because when Australia had the ball, they had a lot of rapid possession from the breakdown, and I think New Zealand will likely do more with that ball than Australia did.
Also, England are going in there as underdogs, really. So the pressure is on New Zealand. They're going for their third World Cup. They're going to be the bookies' favourite. They're rated the number one team in the world. Let's be honest, the majority of people outside of England, I suppose, probably think New Zealand are going to win.
The majority of people in England think New Zealand are going to win.
I don't want to speak for everyone, but it's quite a nice position sometimes going into a game knowing that you've got a chance, but no one thinks you're going to win. So a little bit of pressure is off, whilst the pressure is mounted on New Zealand. But saying that, though, that's every single game New Zealand plays, so it's no different to anything else. And New Zealand tend to deal with the pressure well. But this is World Cup semi-final, and it's a different kind of pressure now.
Yeah, and you know what it's like, though, boy. You have all the pressure you want. Like, sometimes you can have a massive game and feel completely relaxed.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be Blues against Ospreys, or it can be Bath Rotherham, and you can just be unbelievably nervous all week for whatever reason, or feel a lot of pressure all week. Some weeks are just different. Almost every time, what happens is you walk out there, you smash into someone, and the nerves are gone, and you're just into it and doing what you've always done. So yeah, you might see a slightly nervy start, but I just don't think it's going to be a game. I don't think it's going to be a game where that really matters too much. And this is all media jockeying, isn't it, really, more than anything else?
I don't think you can go into the game thinking that, right, we're just going to slow New Zealand down, or we're going to play slow ball. We're going to just pick and go. We're going to kick the ball a lot. We're going to go to the air, because you need to score tries against New Zealand as well. You have to do something special to beat New Zealand. I don't think playing a conservative game will work, because New Zealand will score tries.
No, I don't. I'm just talking about when they've got the ball is all I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I've just gone off on a tangent now. But in terms of England, they're going to have to do. So, they're going to have the game of their lives, basically, to beat New Zealand. And they can do it. There's no doubt about that. But you've got to play to the highest level you can. And you're going to have to score 3 or 4 tries. No doubt. No doubt. Because with Moanga, with Barrett, with Reece, whoever they pick, they will score 100%. They'll score 3 tries, I reckon. I reckon you have to score 3/4 to beat them.
Yeah, you probably, when you got the ball, you probably got to go at them, haven't you? So Eddie Jones referred to Gilbert Anoka, who's the mental skills coach, the mental prep coach for the All Blacks, being busy this week, whether he is or not. But did you ever have any, I can't imagine you having any call for that, but did you ever have any call for sort of a mental prep coach?
We played France in Paris, and it was like a 9 o'clock kickoff in the evening once. Gareth Jenkins was our coach, and he was really worried. No one else was worried, but he was really worried about 9 p.m. kickoff. He was going, boys, 9 p.m. kickoff this week. Don't worry, though. We've got John Neal.
I know John Neal.
Yeah. So basically, we had at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we all came downstairs and did some juggling, pinned the tail on the donkey, bit of jigsaw, Jenga, and, you know, the little loop where you got to go through the wire and it buzzes if you touch it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We did that for an hour, and that was it. That was it. That was how we're going to prepare for a 9 o'clock kickoff. We'll go down to the team room and play some children's games for an hour.
There is thinking behind that, isn't there, though? But then it's getting your brain used to not winding down at nine, but winding up. But now they just train at kickoff time, don't they?
Yeah, and James Hook was late to that meeting as well, because we'd all been down the Adidas shop, and you get like a limit amount of money which you can spend, and I think they messed up because they were given everything for cost, and I don't know what it was. You probably had like £2,000 limit.
Nice.
You know, you get a few tops, something for the missus maybe, but Hooky spent all of his money, all of his budget, and he's walking back up to the hotel and he's kicking a football. He's got tennis rackets on his shoulder. And he was late for the meeting. You know, you get a few things, don't you? You know, you think, a few t-shirts.
He's a hockey goalkeeper. He's got all the pads on.
He had everything. But yeah, so that's how we're going to beat France with a 9 o'clock kickoff. We're going to juggle at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It didn't work, mate. We lost.
Yeah, the only time I remember really using one was Dave Allred, the kicking coach, before we played against Argentina. And Phil Keithwaite, the scrum coach, said, go and have a word with him. He's really good. And I was like, I will. And then a couple of days later, I got a note under my door from Phil Keith Roach, and we are very close, you know, very, we love each other. But he said, you said you were going to go and see Dave Allred, and I've just asked him, and you've done all about it. That was the note I got. So I went straight to Dave Allred, had an hour with Dave Allred. It was amazing. Like, it was amazing. Gave me some triggers, some things to say to myself during the game. Like, it felt great. I felt it's the best I ever felt in a game. Came back, I was like, I'm going to keep using that. Used a lot of Dave's stuff again and got injured second game of the season and missed the whole season. And missed the World Cup. It was like, brilliant. Not that I would have gone to the World Cup, but I wouldn't have minded having a shout. Like, at least getting to scrummage against some of the lads that might have got picked that season.
Yeah. I'm sorry, mate.
It didn't happen. But he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. By the time I got back in there, he was gone. But he still goes around doing kicking. And he's like, he was famously Johnny's kicking coach. And yeah. I think he was a kicker or kicking coach in the NFL. So he's like a serious guy. But
he works with Justin Rose, I think, now, mate. I'm sure it's Justin Rose.
Oh, there you go. Amazing guy. Driving into Farley House once when I worked at Bath Rugby's training ground, I was following this white convertible car in, and it was only one lane in, and it's like all country lanes all the way in from the main road. And you can't overtake safely. So someone's doing 18 to 20 miles an hour in a 30 or a 40 all the way. You can't get past them. That was this car. And I'm like pretty chilled. I'm not in a rush. In the end, I'm like, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. I'm on the horn. I'm flashing. Like, is this person drunk? I'm thinking I'm going to have to phone the police. He's doing 15 in a 30 and I can't get past. Car's queuing up behind me on the horn. Pulls into Farley House. Then I'm like, oh my God, he's going to the same as me. Pulls into the car park. Oh my God, he's going to where I park. Got there, parked up a couple of cars away in a space. Dave Allred gets out and he knows that I've been horning and beeping and tooting him and flashing him the whole way in. He didn't even look. He just gets out and walks in like normal, like nothing's happened, really slowly. And then he's at the club quite a lot coaching. He might have been coaching George Ford, I suppose. I can't remember. He walked past me in the hallway. We went on tours. We know each other. And you'd say, good morning, Dave. And he will literally look you in the eye and keep walking and not say hello. It's impossible to do that. It's impossible. He walked straight past. And then one day, I walked into like the tea and coffee making area, and Danny Crucott, who is getting a lot of mentions on this pod, Danny, who was running the academy then, who obviously went on like 8 tours with Dave Allred. All of Dan's 69, 70 caps, Dave Allred was there. So they know each other really well. And walk in and Dan is just laughing hysterically. Like, what's going on? He goes, oh, Allred's here again, ignoring me. I was like, yeah, what is that? He goes, mate, he just walks straight past. I'm like, he goes, here he comes. Morning, Dave. You all right, mate? And Dave looks him in the eye and just walks past in a corridor. It's 1 meter wide, 1 meter wide. And we are in hysterics. And it's like he just absolutely point blank refused to acknowledge. It was not like no hatred, no venom, just like, no.
Not today. I'm not having
not
it.
Not today. I'm not doing it, mate. I'm not having that sort of day.
You sort of hope that he's having a little giggle to himself, just like it's part of his game.
I really hope so.
Otherwise, that's just ignorant, mate. Sorry.
Yeah, you go home and you tell everyone at home and they're like, oh, what rude this. Nah, mate.
Oh, I play this game, right? I play this game when I walk past all the boys and I just ignore them. It's funny. It's so funny. They go, what, Dave? And I just ignore them. Don't even look at them.
It's like when someone's been on a shopping spree. Oh, show us what you got. Nah, I don't like that. No, don't like that. Don't like that. Whatever he says, we hate it, yeah?
No. I go the other way. I say, I love it. And I know it's terrible.
We had a kit man, Fat Greg, at Bath. And Fat Greg is not fat anymore, but he used to ring you and say, all right, Flats, who's that? Oh, it's Fat Greg. All right, Fat Greg. So we had Fat Greg at Bath, and he loves a podcast. There's a good chance he's listening to this. He's a good fella, actually. He's flogging apartments in Spain last time, off plan last time I heard. But he's always got his finger in a pie. But I remember we got these new... We were sponsored by Adidas as well at Bath. We got these new weightlifting shoes all arrived. All the boys, you know, we call them slammers, all the boys' weightlifting shoes, you know. So it's like, and they're silver, like shiny silver with straps on. I was like, these are actually really cool. Like, these are actually nicer than the trainers I've got. And he joked and he was like, you could wear them out, couldn't you? You could wear them out on a Saturday night. And like, I was like, you actually could.
No.
Like, you could wear these on a Saturday night. Anyway, we're like, Willie. So what we did was just a couple of us that week, after weights, we just kept our slammers on. Because you know you take your slammers off when you leave the gym?
Yeah.
Because they're flat and wooden, you don't want to walk on them. So we all wore our slammers to lunch. And then it's like, she's going to town for a coffee, boys. And like, we wore our slammers like out the kitchen. So we thought we're all going to town in our slammers. Saturday night, all by one, in Bath. He's there in jeans and slammers.
Please. Please.
Yeah, but he wore slammers on a night out. Oh, it was great.
Oh, I hope they were like real flared jeans as well. What year is this?
Boot cuts. They're boot cuts, they were.
Bound to be boot cut, aren't they? With the back of the boot cut as well, of the jean is a little bit frayed.
You couldn't see, frayed. You couldn't see the Velcro strap over the front of the laces on the slammers until he walked and his boot cut jean kicked out at the bottom.
You're horrible, mate. Anyway, the two lineups have yet to be announced at the time of this recording. You said, Flats, that apparently, from your sources, that Ford might be at 10.
Well, no, Alex Lowe said it in the Times.
Okay, it's got to be true then. To keep across all the news as and when it breaks, get yourself along to itv.com/RugbyWorldCup2019.
Before we talk about Wales, Shanko, we're going to play something which is designed primarily to annoy you. We know how much you love your golf. You're like obsessed with it. You're like Matt Banahan. Like your living is made in rugby, but really you want to be a golfer. You also love corporate jollies more than anyone I know because you get your expenses paid. So what do you make of this report that R. Jill Douglas and R. Brian O'Driscoll sent about the kind of thing he's getting up to in his spare time?
So it's the ITV day off and we are having a lovely day trip, aren't we, Brian? We've been on the bus and it's a beautiful sunny day. It makes a change. It's been pouring with rain for the last few days. Are you having a fun day?
Yeah, it's been really nice. You know, visit a couple of temples, get a little bit of culture in. It's meant to be a glass of wine at lunch. So, yeah, all the things that I like on tour. So, yeah, it's been a fun day. I think it's important that, you know, you don't just whittle away the days, that you actually do get to experience a bit of what the country you're visiting is all about. And, yeah, it's good to do it as a collective.
Also, you had a bit of a day off on Monday as well, Brian, because kind of getting over the disappointment of Ireland going out of the World Cup, but you made up with it with a very special day on Monday. I came down to watch you play golf, and it wasn't just any ordinary round of golf, was it? Tell us a little bit about what you did on Monday.
No, I was one of four ex-rugby players, George Gregan, Mike Tindall and Brian Havana, that were treated to playing a hole of golf with Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Hideki Matsuyama and Jason Day. So it was memory of a lifetime, that one. It was class.
It wasn't just class, though. You putted the putt of your life on the green in front of all those people, in front of four of the world's top golfers. I mean, what did that feel like?
Well, the tee shot was absolutely... It was one of the most nerve-wracking things I've ever done. Like, my whole body was trembling. I was just like, please, just get airborne. And I actually hit an all right shot. And then I got to have a putt of Rory McIlroy's tee shot, and he gave me a line. I've just been missing Rory McIlroy all my life, giving me good lines. And it's probably the first time I've ever hit a putt exactly where I wanted to hit it, on having been coached to hit it there. And he said, just left of that pitch mark, about 3 yards away, and I hit it and flush right on the left hand side, and it went in at about 100 miles an hour. So if it hadn't hit the hole, he would have had a tricky one back, but it went square in. So yeah, very, very pleased.
Yeah, birdied the hole, and Rory was delighted. But I think the big highlight for you, certainly it looked like it, when Tiger came and gave you the big high five.
Like, Rory high-fived me, and then Tyndall did too. And the next thing I saw Tiger there, I was like, oh my God. Will I just leave my arm up here? Just leave him, make sure he can't leave me hanging. And he came over, gave me a high-five. I was like, Tiger Woods high-fived me after knocking in. He was impressed with a 25-foot birdie putt. That is all time.
It was amazing. It was a great day, and it's lovely to get the opportunity to do things like that. And it was great to come and watch you fellas enjoy that and just... You know, just I think that there's something really special about seeing somebody that's done as much in you with, as you have done in sport, but still get a little bit awestruck and starstruck when you meet somebody like Tiger Woods.
I think this, though, everybody the world over would. You know, is he not the number one athlete, certainly current, yeah. That people would want to meet, and to get to play a hole of golf with him and have a little conversation and get him to appreciate one of your shots, having lived a lifetime of appreciating his? No, it was... Class, yeah, really class.
It was indeed. And we're going to have a bit of lunch and then we're going to be straight headlong into the weekend because we've got two big semi-finals to look forward to. So just give us a line on each of the semi-finals. How you think it's going to go? Because that match between New Zealand and England is going to be momentous. It's worthy of a final itself.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of people are saying it's a shame that it isn't, that they had to meet at this stage rather than coming the other sides of the draw. But I think, you know, Wales and South Africa will have a bit to say yet. I did say that I thought the winner would come from this side. I stand by that. England looked very impressive against Australia just when there was question marks asked of them. New Zealand just blew Ireland away. You knew from within 90 seconds that Ireland were in trouble. Wales were lucky to kind of eke their way in, but, you know, they showed huge bottle and mental resolve to hang in there till the death. And South Africa, you know, we talked from an Irish perspective about trying to go that route, you know, to qualify for the first ever semi-final. I don't know if they would have gotten anywhere close with that South African performance dominant against Japan. So I think we got two mouth-watering semi-finals. If everyone plays well, I think New Zealand edge England and South Africa edge Wales on the basis of what we've seen so far. But, you know, it'd be brilliant for ourselves as well, back in the UK and Ireland, if we manage to get an England-Wales final. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for that.
I did notice no Welsh there. Xenophobes, that's what I call them. Is that right? Have I got that right?
You have, yeah. Do you regard yourself as foreign?
It looked good.
I suppose
though.
In Japan we all are, yeah.
Caught up with Mike Tyndall yesterday and he was telling us all about it. And, it was funny. Brian Abana just launched this shot and it would look beautiful, but because of all the adrenaline, he just hits it way over the back into the crowd. Dricko nails a birdie putt in front of everyone.
High five from Tiger Woods.
High five. Doesn't get better than that, does it?
How good is that?
Although I'd say it's a little bit lucky, because if that ball does not hit that hole, it is going like 15 metres past. He said it with pace. Yeah.
The thing is, though, you wouldn't have liked playing golf with Tiger Woods and Matsuyama and Jason Day, you and Rory McIlroy. You wouldn't have enjoyed that because the lads had to pay for their own taxi to get there.
Oh yeah,
you wouldn't have liked that, would you? Still thinking about that taxi, aren't you, with Nicky Robbo the other day?
Yeah, horrendous.
You'd rather not play with Tiger Woods than pay 12 quid for a taxi, wouldn't you?
I'll just walk back, mate. Just would have walked back.
If Michelle had emailed you and said you can play golf on your day off with Tiger Woods, if your first email would have been expenses covered, she'd have said no, and you'd be like, I'll get back to you. You'd have had to think about it.
Can you get me a corporate gig there to pay for it?
Yeah, anything I can do when I'm there to scoop up a few.
It did look amazing, mind.
So I was with Brian this morning, Driscoll, at breakfast in the hotel, and he is in markedly better shape than I am. something's work to do there. But he's also, I think, I don't think you mind me saying this, he's in much better shape than you. That's annoying because, if it's not annoying for me, but it's annoying for you because he's kind of doing you on every level, isn't he, at the moment? Was he the best 13 you played against, do you think?
You say he's in better shape than me, but is he happy? You know, I'm eating food that I enjoy. If it tastes good, it's bad for you. That's his motto. He's 40 years old now. At some stage, he's going to have to think, well, I've got to enjoy my life. So, I've done him there. I am YOLO.
Who was the best 13 you played against? You've got to say him now.
Yeah, he was up there, definitely. Tana Umanga, another one.
Oh, yeah. Was he hard work? Was Umanga really hard work?
Yeah, and he played him a couple of times, because I had to play on the wing a few times as well, against Rokokoku.
Oh, I remember that. Oh, it's on YouTube if you can't find it.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I used to hate it.
Shanklin's been turned inside out.
I was really good at chasing kicks and stopping quick throw-ins, just waving my arms around. But, and catching the ball from a kick and then feeding it inside to the 15 and then staying back on my wing. But Inga Tuigamala.
Oh, yeah.
When I was at Saracens, he was at Newcastle, like he was probably one of the original massive Maori units. Polynesian, wasn't he? He was Samoan. But I always remember the video of him on the Lions tour. He just barrels over Martin Johnson. But he was unbelievable. He was wider than he was taller.
He wasn't.
He was.
He wasn't.
He was.
He wasn't 6 feet wide. It's ridiculous.
he was near enough, but that was nearly impossible to tackle.
He was as wide as he was tall when he put his arms out at 90 degrees.
You know what I'm saying. I'm exaggerating a little bit. But Dricko, yeah, was definitely one of the toughest.
Here's a conundrum for you, or a mind bender. Your wingspan is the same as your height, right?
Yeah.
Everyone knows that. My wingspan is the same as my height. It's 184 centimetres. Yet I've got really stumpy arms, like a T-Rex, like Paul Doran Jones. How does that work? And Stuart Hooper's got really wide shoulders and he's got arms like an orangutan and his wingspan is the same as his height, like 6'5 or whatever. We've measured it. Like, how does...
I don't know, mate. If you're looking for answers, it's been to the wrong person.
No, but I've got an answer if you want it. I think my arm, because they might be quite, like, thick.
They look...
Maybe they look shorter than they are.
Yeah. Thanks to Jill and Brian for that. Bod predicting narrow victories for New Zealand and South Africa, if everything goes to form. We've already passed judgment on All Blacks in England game. Next, we'll find out if we can agree on what's going to happen when Wales meet the Box on Sunday. Wales, South Africa. So, how are they going to beat them? Yeah, I think they're going to have to target the halfbacks. John Davis needs to be fit. They can still beat them without him, but it certainly enhances your chances with him and Hadley Parks, because the combination works in the centre. It works at the Scarlets. It has worked for the last 18 months for Wales. I think they'll have to go to the air a lot as well. I think they've got to put a lot of pressure on Willie LaRue at 15, because sometimes he can make the odd mistake. I reckon both wingers as well. We're going to have to put the ball up. So their whole back three, if we really kick well, kick the challenge, then I think we'll get... I know it sounds a bit basic, mate, but we've not seen that expansive Wales yet. We saw in the first half against Australia. I think with knockout rugby now, that is certainly a ploy they'll use. And Wales are due a big game. They've beaten South Africa in the last four tests, so South Africa will have that in the back of their mind. They'll respect Wales a lot more than they did before. They'll know that, you know, if they don't get it right, Wales will win. Whilst if you look at, you know, probably 10, 15 years ago, South Africa would be uber confident that no matter what goes on, they're going to win. But, you know, it's changed now. I think Wales will have a good psychological edge over them. So they'll have to stop them as well in their tracks. And I think Wales tend to defend better against teams that are more direct. When it comes to your Fijis, your Australias, you know, the teams that play expansive rugby, it's a lot harder to defend for Wales. Whilst I think when they're coming up against big units, you know, they trust their defence, they trust their technique, and I think Wales play better against direct teams. So, there.
Yeah, I think the Prince of Wales has been to visit them.
Yes, he has.
So, that's a bonus. Also, my head says South Africa win this semi-final. My heart says, help me, I'm wrapped in bacon fat.
They have to have the game of their tournament to do it, because we've not seen how good this Welsh team can be. We've seen glimpses. As I said, we saw it in the first half against Australia and we've seen it in patches, but we've not seen enough of it in this tournament so far. And, you know, what would have happened if Vaha Mahina had stayed on the field against 15 men, against a 15 French team.
He's retired. Have you seen that? He's announced his retirement. Poor bloke. Poor bloke. I don't care what anyone says. Really annoys me when people say that. I do care what people say, but my view is stupid thing, red card, obviously done. Get a ban, fine. He must be in such a dark place. I just really hope someone is looking after him because he must be in a horrible, horrible place.
Yeah.
He did something stupid and he's a wonderful player, did something stupid. And he, imagine where you've got to be to retire on the spot like that when he's got a load of rugby left in him.
Not even 30 years old.
And he's such a good player. And like, I did done some stuff filming at French clubs and whatever. And he's so popular and so polite. It's like, it's obviously, he's done a stupid thing. I just really, really hope. I almost want the French Rugby Union to say, we're actually not going to accept your retirement quite yet. Your resignation from the team quite yet. Let's all chill out. We've got your back. We know you did something stupid. Let's all unwind a bit and start again. So just keep an eye on him. I really hope he's all right because I think that is just so brutal.
Yeah, it is. What I will say about this Welsh team as well, Flats, is that, you know, the strength and depth is a lot greater than we think or we thought, should I say, because the players who are coming on the field as well are just really adding to the game. Tomos Williams coming off for Gareth Davis, you know, has some key instances really in all the games that he's featured in. Reece Patchell, we didn't see him last week against France.
He's class though. When he's at it, Reece Patchell can turn a game.
Yeah, he can turn a game because he's all out attack. You know, he gets everyone in the right position. You see sort of the rugby league style influence coming in that most of the teams play now. And he's a pivotal part of that. The props.
If Prince Harry had an identical twin, swallowed him and fast forwarded 15 years, that's Reece Patchell.
I agree.
Say that's a compliment.
Yeah.
Score prediction. Keep it real as well. Don't be that guy.
Okay. Score prediction. I don't do predictions, mate.
No, neither do I. There's such a waste of time. I was trying to con you into it.
Wales meets South Africa in Yokohama at 9 a.m. Sunday morning, live and exclusive on ITV.
Look, you know, 9 a.m. Sunday morning, you know you don't need a.m. and morning. When I did it, it was a joke.
I know, mate. I'm like Ron Burgundy, mate, though. I'm just reading. I'm Ron Burgundy. But remember, friends, the clocks go back this weekend, so don't set your alarms too early. Or is it too late? No idea. What is it?
Don't know. Do they go back here in Japan as well?
Pass.
No, I don't know either.
That's out of my pay grade.
We're so ignorant.
But don't forget.
Yeah, we don't say we didn't warn you, yeah? Got it.
You know what we have to do before we go, Flats? Some more film quote reviews.
I hate these, and loads of people are leaving them, which we hate. We're gutted we asked you now, but you've left so many of them.
What have we got?
Well, I've got one that isn't on there. I thought I'll do one that you will guess. You might be able to guess.
Go on.
Too much weights, not enough speed work.
Jake the Mus. Cook the man some eggs.
We can't go there, all right? We can't go there. But it is a significant movie.
Mr. Dean, he's left a quote from Gru from Despicable Me.
Go on then.
I'm just trying to get in character now.
You look like one of those minions.
You've got to be pulling my leg. That's all right.
That could be quite good.
Go on, yeah.
What about this?
Go on.
From Nosebag. you're a big man, but you're in bad shape. With me, it's a full-time job. That's all right.
Who's that, Vinnie Jones?
Yes. No, it was Razor Ruddock.
You're a big man, but you're in bad shape. With me, it's a full-time job.
That's like Harry Enfield, isn't it? next time we speak, the waiting will be over. And we'll know which two nations are going to be contesting the Webb Ellis Trophy. Here's hoping the two of us aren't contemplating the delights of a third place playoff, but rather the first all Northern Hemisphere final in the history of Earth and the Milky Way in the solar system. Good luck, everyone.
Only me.
So long.